Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenya Knapp. Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. We're glad to have you with us here today. And like always, I've got a really awesome guest. Our guest today is Dr. Audra Stinson. She's coming to us from Southlake, Texas. I love Texas people. They're always cool, interesting people. And Dr. Stinson has been an adjunct with Liberty University for 3 years. She has a number of different degrees in the mental health fields, BA in sociology and psychology, a master's in counseling psychology, and then her PhD in family psychology. And she's also an LPC and has quite an extensive experience doing counseling for lots of different age groups, but she specializes in working with children. So welcome to the program, Dr. Stinson.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming. I gave a little introduction there about you, but I know the listeners are always interested in the people. So is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners about yourself and your background?
You know what? I think you did an excellent job introducing me, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. We're grateful to have you on the program, and having a developmental specialist like you here is really a treat. I know in the last few years, there's been a lot of information swirling around about COVID and how COVID has affected children. Could you tell us from your vast experience working with kids in lots of different settings, what are some of the, I guess to begin with, the broad things that you've seen working with children and how COVID has affected them?
Right. So I saw quite a few different symptoms, and it was really interesting because those symptoms were really specific to age groups. In the younger age group, under age 11, so between the ages of 6 and 11, I saw enuresis, which is bedwetting, nightmares, conduct, behavioral issues, as well as separation anxiety disorder. Now, with the older age group, which is the teenagers between about 12 and 18, quite a bit of depression, suicidality, panic disorder, anxiety, substance abuse, and anorexia. And what's interesting about these different symptoms is they were all really rooted in fear. And the fears, though, were different. In the younger age group, it was really fear of dying, fear of their parents dying from this somewhat elusive COVID. They really didn't understand, especially the younger ones, 6, 7, they really didn't understand what COVID was. In fact, when I had them draw a picture of COVID, it was generally this big, huge, scary monster. With my adolescent clients, it was not so much that fear of COVID itself, but the fear of missing out, that FOMO. It was the fear of being separated from their friends, fear of not having a future, fear of not graduating, not having those milestones that are so important for adolescent development in so many different ways. I mean, identity development is the big one at this age group. Just some the symptoms, but, you know, different symptoms for these different age groups, but all really related to fears.
That makes sense. It's interesting to me how you broke it down by age groups, the younger ones and how where they were developmentally versus the older ones. And I guess what they value is like security versus social connection at those different ages.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For the younger age group, their security obviously is very much wrapped up in their parents. And it was interesting because their level of severity and their symptoms was correlated with the degree of stress and anxiety that was exhibited by their parents. So what you saw was when parents exhibited more anxiety over the virus, when they, you know, listened to the news 24/7, when they talked about it, when they, expressed stress and concern, was this had an effect on their children. With the teenagers, This is a time when they have their friends group, their friend groups. They learn from their friends. Their friend groups help them build a sense of self-worth and identity, and they help them manage their stress. So at this age, at the adolescent age, friends are so important. And it's that physical connection with friends, not necessarily the social media, but that connection, being involved in sports, being involved in extracurricular activities, all that type of, you know, all of that contributes to identity exploration and development, which is so important during the adolescent stage.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, when you mention the younger ages, you mentioned enuresis and nightmares and separation anxiety. And when I think of things like enuresis, I think of, you know, regressive behaviors where the kids, you know, go back to younger stages and all. Would you say that was common with the kids to have regressive behaviors, or is that just like an outlier mentioning like enuresis?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you pointed that out. So any type of change, any type of stress, what we see with trauma, which COVID, the lockdowns, the regulations were considered a traumatic event. So what we see with any type of trauma, whether it's COVID, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's a loss, is we see regressive behaviors as a symptom in younger children. And this can include enuresis, it can include temper tantrums, even thumb sucking, nightmares, all that kind of stuff. So it's actually normal for us to see this as a symptom of trauma. The more fear that they felt, and the less security that they experience, the more severe their symptoms. In other words, when there wasn't necessarily that sense of comfort and reassurance that we, you know, is so important during times of crisis and during trauma. I mean, sometimes we have to, as parents, we have to fake calmness in order to provide reassurance to our children. And I know, you know, at this, during this event, nobody knew it was happening. Nobody knew what to expect. So, of course, this was stressful for parents. So, you know, the more stress and more fear that they exhibited, the more symptoms we saw in the children. And enuresis was one of them. Nightmares, again, was another symptom. When I had one of the clients draw out her nightmares, I said, tell me about, you know, what you're seeing, what your nightmares. And she drew these two monsters, and she even had a name for them. And one was COVID-AN. You know, so I mean, these, they were related to COVID and these COVID fears. And, you know, again, not really knowing what COVID was and not understanding the concept behind the whole virus, but just knowing that this COVID can kill you. And that's what they kept hearing, not only from parents, but, you know, when they would go to the grocery store and, you know, what was looped over the PA system. I mean, they would hear it repeatedly. So, you know, the repetition of the images and the repetition, the masking, you know, that masking in itself, even before COVID, masking in itself elicits a fear response. So when children see these images and hear the messages over and over and over again, it leads to the hyperactivation of what's called the HPA axis, which is the, you know, part of our body, the hypothalamus, pituitary gland, adrenal gland. So what happens is that is involved in the stress response. And when this is chronically activated, it is going to release stress hormones such as cortisol and adrenaline. And it keeps us in almost a constant state of panic and fear. And when we are in a constant state of panic or fear, whether we are a child, an adolescent, or an adult, it's going to lead to symptoms, mental and physical symptoms. And so we saw that with children. We saw that with adolescents. We saw that with adults. It's just an example of how stress and trauma affects us physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm. And that makes perfect sense. I mean, I think about, you know, older people when they, you know, stress all the time, they get high blood pressure and stuff like that. And it's the same thing for younger kids. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. For younger kids, for teenagers, I mean, you know, for adults, it increases autoimmune disorders. It changes everything. You know, it changes the brain. We've just recently found that that hyperactivation, that stress response affects the glial cells, which are in the brain, which increases inflammation. And now we're discovering that inflammation is involved in, you know, depression, anxiety, autoimmune disorders, Alzheimer's, everything. So, you know, that's, you know, gives us even more reason why we need to mitigate and reduce stress as much as we can, even in these kids. And what we're afraid that we're going to see is, as far as a long term, is are these kids experiencing this chronic activation, this chronic fight or flight? Because even some of my clients right now, they continue to say, I'm always on edge. I feel like I just cannot settle down. Like I'm always waiting for the ball to drop. And these are my clients who were children are now teenagers, and some of my teenagers who are now young adults. So we've seen just really how it's changed every aspect of their life, mentally and physically. I mean, the social isolation. I mean, so many of my clients still are struggling with social anxiety that they never experienced before COVID. But the lockdowns and that social isolation really affected their ability to connect with people.
That makes me think, you know, when people have that high level of stress and anxiety all the time, what is it that helps them to calm down? I know for me personally, and not to make this about me, but my faith plays a big role in that as far as helping me calm and pray and sort of let go of it, per se. What have you seen with your clients as far as like what helps them to calm so that they're not in that state of hyper arousal all the time? Or I guess also another question going along with it is sort of like, what techniques do you use to help kids calm down when they're in that hyper arousal state?
Right. That's an excellent question. So when, you know, and I know there's a lot of parents listening, so I'm going to try to really address this question more from a parenting perspective too. So spirituality, and you mentioned that, plays a huge role. You know, research has shown us that spirituality increases resilience. It provides a sense of belongingness. It provides a sense of connection and a sense of hope. And that's really what kids and adolescents need, is hope and a sense of connection. Also, exercise. You know, we know that exercise, you know, changes the brain activity, increases our feel-good chemicals, all that kind of stuff. So if we can get kids involved in activities, sports provide a sense of belongingness, a sense of connection with others. So if we can get them involved in organized sports or even, you know, some sort of organized activity where they can feel connection is so important. Connection and belongingness. We also, as parents, listen to our children. That's really critical that we take the time to listen attentively. And you know what that means? That means we put down our cell phones, we stop scrolling through social media, and we really engage with our child, with our teenager. We listen attentively, eye contact. We ask them open-ended questions. Tell me how you're feeling. What is that like? We show that interest in them. We're intentional in our efforts to really connect with our kids. This is really critical that we give them that opportunity to express themselves, express their emotions, and connect with us and us with them. And also, turn off the news. Turn off the news. Turn off the social media. Reduce or limit the amount of social media even that their children use. Social media is, research upon research has shown that that increases loneliness. It increases depression, anxiety. In fact, if we look at before COVID, BC, before COVID, we saw that the rate of depression and anxiety amongst youth was increasing. And it started increasing with this cohort of, or this age group of teenagers that were raised on the cell phone. Dr. Jonathan Haidt, he's a social psychologist. He has an excellent podcast on this topic called Are Your Kids All Right? And I know that's for a different, we'll talk about that in another podcast, but it really highlights the role that's the negative role of social media in contributing to some of this depression and anxiety. So of course, during the lockdowns, when all the children had was social media, it was almost like a double whammy for them. So not only did the social isolation contribute to the symptoms, but also, it was like social media, yes, it kept them connected, but it also, contributed to some of those symptoms that they experienced. So again, going back to the question that you asked, some of the ways that we can increase that resilience in kids and really help them cope is also, as parents, demonstrating healthy coping skills ourselves. Healthy coping skills might be, wow, yes, I had a stressful day, so we talk about our feelings, but showing them how we're going to handle that stress. Hey, let's go on a walk. It's really important to engage in family activities. Maintain normalcy, maintain structure. Children, especially the younger ones, need that routine. They need predictability. They need to know what to expect. Change is not easy for anybody, but especially for this younger age group. So if there's going to be a change in routine, let them know ahead of time. Just let them know, that there's hope. Let them, I think one of the things that was highlighted when children and adolescents were admitted into these psychiatric units during the height of COVID was that so many of them expressed hopelessness. They had no hope in their future. They had no connection. They had no sense of belongingness. And there was a CDC report that came out in 2022 that showed that school connectedness made a huge difference during that time of the height of COVID. And they found that children and youth who felt a sense of being cared for and connected to peers and adults at school were significantly less likely than those who did not report the sense of connection. They were less likely to experience that sadness and hopelessness. So again, just showing that importance of connection and belongingness and, parents being there for their children, teenagers having those outlets. And again, as you mentioned, spirituality, having that sense of connection, praying, having that church community makes a huge difference. Getting, that the teenagers involved, a lot of them still to this day have trouble leaving the house. They're wanting to stay home and play video games. They don't know how to connect with people anymore. So it's really important as parents that we help give them the tools to connect with not only us as parents, but with others in society.
That's good. I mean, you covered so much there that, I mean, and it's funny when you talk about it all, it all connects. I mean, like the whole thing about fear and fear expressed in so many different categories. I wouldn't think of it all and I wouldn't connect all the dots like you have, but it does all fit together. Let me go back, if I could, to one of the things you mentioned earlier about teenagers. You mentioned that you saw an increase in eating disorders. And I'm just wondering, in regards to COVID and disconnection and the fear of all that, like, what's the connection that you see with eating disorders?
So what I really saw with the eating disorders, and of course it was mostly, males do develop eating disorders, but the majority that I saw at the time were females. And what we tend to see is that it's about control. So these adolescents during this time of COVID, during the height of COVID, was they experience a significant loss of control. And remember, this is during a stage where it's so important that adolescents are given that sense of autonomy, that sense of freedom, that sense of being able to make decisions on their own. And now here they were during the lockdowns and being controlled. They had no control. They felt a lack of autonomy over every area in their life. So the only thing that they had control over was their body. So that's why, one of the reasons, I mean, obviously there's a number of reasons. I mean, anorexia is a symptom. Anorexia is a symptom of the struggles that we're experiencing in our daily life. So an adolescent who, I see family dynamics involved in anorexia, whether it's enmeshment, whether it's undifferentiated sense of self. So, but control is a big one. And again, when we're looking at control and, we think about that control, that loss of control that they experienced, then we go, okay, it's really only normal and natural that they would try to exert control in one area of their life that they was the only area that they felt like they had some control. And it's interesting to see that because really it goes back when we think about that lack of control that was those government restrictions that was forced upon these people from, government entities. But it really kind of reflects and makes us think about parenting styles. And when we look at the different parenting styles, there's four different parenting styles, but the two that are, uniquely different is the authoritative and the authoritarian. And with the authoritarian parenting style, we see a lack of warmth, punitive punishments, and excessive control. And it's interesting because in that authoritarian parenting style is where we see a lot of symptomology in teenagers that increases the risk for depression and anxiety and anorexia versus the authoritative parenting style, which includes warmth and rules, but with relationships and open communication. So again, it's just really looking at, when we exert so much control on an adolescent during a time in their life where we really need to be loosening the reins and giving them that sense of autonomy and that sense of freedom to develop their sense of self and identity, within reason, of course, we do tend to see attempts towards trying to have control. So whether that is with anorexia or whether that's in other ways, in fact, when we hear the word rebellion is really just, a way to explain how children are searching for a sense of freedom a lot of times when there's too much control. So that's really what we saw with the increase in anorexia. It was a way for them to exert control.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm so encouraged to hear you describe the symptom, like the crux of the issue is that lack of control, and then the way they try to take control. And when that's the case, eating disorders, like you said a second ago, is really the symptom rather than the true driving issue. And
right.
And that applies to so much of therapy. Like, I'm so glad you said that, because I'm thinking of the listeners now, like when they see other issues like eating disorders and all, they have to ask themselves, what is driving this behavior? And if we treat what's driving it, you know, that sense of lack of control, then we're going to actually solve the issue and solve the problem and actually help them. But if all we do is, you know, focus on eating plans and seeing the nutritionist, right, which all is good, we're not going to really get to the heart of the issue.
If we focus on the symptoms, we're not going to get to the roots. And getting to the root and treating the roots is going to address, you know, so many factors, not only the symptom, but the diagnosis itself, the disorder. So really, when I see children and when they have a disorder, a diagnosis, I see that as a symptom. I mean, separation anxiety disorder, that's a symptom. So it's about getting to the root. What's driving those behaviors? Because if we can get to the root and understand what's driving the behaviors, then we can better treat the child. And it takes a whole, you know, it takes, you know, not only the counselor, but the child and the entire family. Children aren't created in a vacuum. Children are, you know, shaped within a context, and they're shaped by people that are in their environment, whether that be peers, parents, siblings, teachers. So we really have to take the whole entire context into account rather than just the individual person.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Now, I tell you, I think you're making sense to more than just me. I think a lot of people listening are going, this lady's connecting the dots. So,
hey.
So I know that you're a practitioner. Do you write very much or speak very much? Because I'm just thinking that people might go, I'm connecting with this lady. Have you published or anything, or do you have any blogs or anything like that that you do?
But just might have inspired me. I do not. I love to speak. I do public speaking. I don't write. And I think really it's like I have all these ideas. I have these thoughts, but I think it's more time management. You know, I do work a lot. I teach like at Liberty and several other schools, but in private practice. But I would love to speak with anybody if they, you know, if they need additional insight into, you know, into raising children, into some of these disorders. So absolutely.
Well, let me ask you that, since you mentioned that you'd love to speak to people, I'm sure if someone listening goes, oh, this lady's the perfect speaker about this. How would you like people to contact you if they'd like to follow up with you about any of the topics they've heard today?
Absolutely. Well, they can reach me via email, and my email address is Dr. Audra, D-O-C-T-O-R, Audra, A-U-D-R-A, at AOL.com. And you can also reach out to me at my private, I have a group practice. I'm actually part of a Christian group practice called Hopefully Counseling, which is in Southlake, Texas. And so it's on the internet, so hopefullycounseling.com. And my bio and the bio of my colleagues are also on there. Fantastic group of people. So absolutely, I'm available for any kind of speaking engagements or even for one-on-ones. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I am noticing on the clock we're getting about that time, but before I wrap up with everyone, I always try to ask them, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners? That's sort of the catch-all question before we wrap up. So is there any last things on your heart or mind today you'd like to share with the listeners about all the different topics we've covered?
You know, I know that the listeners, a lot of them are parents. I mean, I'm a parent myself. So really, my heart is for children and for adolescents and for young adults. And I just encourage the parents that are listening to, you know, give yourself grace I think that's one thing that's so important. Give yourself grace. You know, we work so hard as parents and we're not going to do it right all the time. And it's easy for me to sit on this platform and tell you what you should be doing or should not be doing. But we don't often give ourselves enough grace. So I just encourage you to give yourself grace, be prayerful in everything that you do. And, you know, embrace your children, be intentional. If you've made mistakes in the past, if you, you know, if you stressed out during COVID and watched the news 24/7, you know, that's okay. There's a lot of parents that did that too. But right now, you know what, moving forward, I just encourage you, you know, walking in faith and praying over your children and, you know, helping them find that sense of belongingness and connection. Because if they don't find it at home and in healthy areas, whether that's through sports, extracurricular activities, through faith-based activities, they're going to find it in other ways that aren't so healthy, whether that's in, you know, gang-related activities or in unhealthy relationships. So that's my, that's really just my suggestion and my take home for everybody today. And I appreciate you having me on here, and I appreciate all the listeners for taking the time to listen to me. And I just, again, encourage you in your walk, and I'm praying for everybody and encouraging everyone and in their journey.
Well, great. That's a lot of sage advice there. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners do as well. So with that, we're really at that time, but we appreciate all of you joining us today on the Mental Healthy Podcast, and we look forward to you joining us next time. So thanks so much, and thank you, Dr. Stinson. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
All righty. Thanks so much. Y'all have a good day, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.